This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 236 for Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. And I've got a special guest tonight. First time on the show, Megan Townsend. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Hey, this is fantastic. We've been talking about this for a little while, and we finally managed to find both the opportunity and a fantastic reason to have you on the show.
I know, right? I know. We've been talking about it for probably weeks, I think, at this point. I think it's been a while.
Yeah, I'm a busy bee. That's one issue.
We both are.
Yeah, and that's even my podcasting schedule has kind of been all over the map. But I'm kind of finally getting myself back to home base. As I prepare for vacation, I really have to focus down. It's like, okay, all of these things have to happen. I have to line all this stuff up before the end of the month. So I wanted to make sure that I brought you on. And even as busy as I am, I took some time off this week, which is good. And we're going to get into why a little bit later. But before we get there, I want to make sure that everybody knows a little bit about you, because I know that we talk all the time about comics and sci-fi stuff and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, you are an avid con-goer and cosplayer, right?
Yes, I am. A little bit like jack of all trades, master of none sort of deal. I kind of do have my many hats that I wear. So,
nice.
But yeah, mostly avid con-goer, insane cosplayer, big comic book reader.
Nice. Yeah, well, you're in good company then. I have not yet had the opportunity to cosplay at a convention because, of course, normally I'm behind a table, mine.
Right.
And I'd have to find something very comfortable to sit in all day long.
Yes, that's the tricky part.
Yeah. So I revert to nerdy t-shirts. You know, like I've got Superman, Green Lantern, Star Wars. You know, like I've got these shirts that I only really ever wear to cons because it's the best place to wear them.
Yeah. They're so distinctive though too, which really works. And just, you know, Alistair, I know you've had him on the show before. He wears his Star Trek t-shirt.
Yeah.
Or sweater rather, which
it's a hoodie,
is awesome because it's comfortable, but it's still showing your nerd colors, letting your nerd flag fly, if you
Precisely,
will.
Precisely. Yeah. And the t-shirts that I have are actually quite comfortable as well. Like they're soft cotton. And they've got they're not you know those old graphic tees that would have like the rubber-ish,
almost like the stressed ones,
that kind of stuff on them. They're not those. What I have is like a screen print, so it looks like those, but it has the ones that are it moves very freely with with you, like if you hunch forward or if you do whatever, it doesn't crinkle in a funny way and it doesn't feel very weird. I used to find those ones really hot, the ones that actually had like the ironed on ones. It's hard to find some clean t-shirts these days in terms of the design. Like I find so much of it is supposed to look like it's supposed to look like you've had it since the 80s, but it's like
it's sort of like a mixed bag. It's like on one hand it's like vintage tee style, and on the other hand it's like, well, I want something maybe a little bit cleaner.
Like I'm paying $20 for this, I kind of want it to look like it's new.
Good place to go for that. There's a store called Spencer's that has amazing stuff.
Cool.
They have like awesome graphic tees.
So with your cosplay, how long have you been doing that?
Oh God. I'd say for probably 10 years. Oh God.
Wow. That's
awesome. A long time.
Still though.
Yeah. I didn't start making my own stuff. I used to buy my own stuff.
Right.
I used to buy like eBay things. And I remember the very first cosplay I did was, a character called Tsubaki from an anime called Soul Eater. Which is really quirky and really interesting. There's people who turn into weapons and it's very fun. And her design was just really cute. It was really cool. She was like a really chill ninja. So it was kind of fun to just, and it was really distinctive too. There are people who like would stop me and be like, oh crap. You know, they were really excited about it. Cause it was at like just getting to the peak of popularity to the point where not a lot of people were doing it, but a lot of people were recognizing it.
Mm.
So it was kind of fun being the only one. And I did like a lot of closet cosplay. Like I think my favorite one was Tifa from Final Fantasy VII. And my favorite was like a little girl who stopped me in the hallway and she was like, "You're my favorite character. Can I please get a picture?" And it was like, it was the cutest.
That's amazing.
So cute. Really, it's like that, Disneyland for nerds.
Yeah. That kind of stuff is going to be really fun. You know, like I see that at conventions all the time where you see someone, walking by and like they are Darth Vader or a stormtrooper. Yeah. And then there's a little kid and the little kid is dressed as Anakin or Luke Skywalker or something like that. So then they pose, but they pose in like a sword fight. And it's hilarious because like the adult Darth Vader is 6.5 feet tall and the 5 year old is like, you know, trying to fight him and stuff like that kind of stuff. I find really cool. I've seen that with comic villains too.
Oh, it's so great. I love seeing little kids get involved in it so much because I think we kind of leave them by the wayside slightly. So I love seeing young kids get into cosplay. Mm. Like at HallCon, our local convention, we have like a kids section for the costume contest.
Nice.
And there are some little kids, like probably about like 5 or 6, and they go and they rock it every single time. Like the last couple of years I went to go watch it, they are so in character and they have their poses down better than I do. Mm. I've been doing it for a long time. They're like 6 years old and they're amazing. I love it.
Very cool. And it's cool to kind of get them involved creatively and stuff like that. And cause I mean, like maybe they don't draw, maybe they read comics, but they don't really have any other expressive stuff that they're doing. So getting them into cosplay is really fun. And it's cool that they can, it's an activity that they can do with their folks. And I find that we're at that stage now where so many people kind of I'm going to lump us into the same generation, even though I know there's a few years in between us, but like the people that are in this age range that were and are nerds all through, you know, high school, junior high, and et cetera, are now married and having kids. Mm-hmm. So they're bringing the 3-year-old to HalCon, you know, for the afternoon or to Geekquinox or Decaf, stuff that's around here. And they're loving it because like they get to introduce their kids, especially when the kids are old enough to like know who Spider-Man is and, you know, be excited about it as, you know, as they are. I can't remember when it was, but it must've been a little while ago. Troy Little is a cartoonist from PEI and he does Powerpuff Girls and a bunch of other stuff. And his son, I follow him on Instagram and he was posting about showing his son the classic 70s Spider-Man cartoon.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Yeah, right. And the kid is loving it. It's amazing. You know, and to us, it's a little bit cheesy and dated and it was good when we watched it when we were kids, but it doesn't necessarily hold up, but 3-year-olds don't care. You know,
I love cheese though. Yeah. Give me the cheese. Now,
but great. Yeah. So, I mean, but like seeing that kind of thing that's what's being handed down with kids and cosplay and conventions and things like that, which I think is really, really cool. So do you have any big plans this con season? Like, do you have a big costume that you're working on?
I do. It's really huge. It's not really anything. It's a little bit offbeat from like comic book convention style. I'm a big Broadway nerd as well. I really like Broadway. I'm actually a classically trained singer. So I grew up, you know, singing a lot of show tunes and I had 4 years of professional vocal training. So, I was introduced to a lot of the great shows and, I've always loved The Wizard of Oz. And there's a musical that's inspired by a book that was inspired by The Wizard of Oz, called Wicked. And it's essentially like the backstory of the Wicked Witch of the West and how she became to be. So there's a specific dress she wears in the second act and it's something like it weighs 25 pounds.
Oh my God.
And it has more than like a football field's worth of material and it's all hand done, like machine done. The skirt alone, it's like a full floor length circle skirt. So it's very big. And there's these individual ruffles that are like individually sewn on in like a sort of spiral going up the skirt. And it was really meant to be inspired by like earth and like, you know, minerals and things. Cause the character is very earthy and kind of grounded. She, you know, the classic Wicked Witch, you can just kind of forget her from the movie, like the show character's name is Elphaba. That's her character in the musical. And she's very different. She's very political and very more like an activist than anything else, but her dress is gorgeous. It's stunning. So, that's been my big project this year. On my Instagram, you can actually see I did some makeup tests for her. Lots of green. I'm going to be green the entire weekend at HalCon this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, and for, I'm for excited anybody, to do it. Yeah, for anybody wondering, it's Nerdasmic, NERDASMIC for Megan's Instagram. Yeah, I remember seeing the green go by, which, and it looked fantastic. Right. Like
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of experience with 10 years of cosplay and like doing fun costume makeup and stuff like that. So is that going to be impractical though? Like the giant skirt, is that, are you going to make in a way that folds up?
No, because I'm making it as Broadway accurate as I possibly can. And the actress runs around stage for a good hour and a half of the evening in the same dress. So I could probably wear it for 8 hours. That should be fine. But it's, I have, you can pick it up. I'm not going to make it super long. So it's like a good walking length.
Right.
I think the thing I'm worried about the most is the green makeup coming off of my hands.
Right.
I'm trying to go as Broadway accurate as I possibly can. They use like a, it's called a chroma cake. It's like a pancake water-based green makeup.
Mm.
And they just kind of throw it on with artist brushes and it's, so it's not airbrush or anything, but I'm going to have to like spray my hands with hairspray or something to really keep the green on. Because it doesn't transfer a lot, but it does transfer a little bit. So there's going to be little specks of green just everywhere. Yeah.
I'm excited something, to do it. Would an artistic license, like green gloves, would that fix any potential problem but still try to remain as true to character as possible? Or would black gloves be more?
It could, but I kind of want to go all out and just say, hey, I did it that I did it.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm just trying to think about like practical solutions would be like green hands, but maybe black lace gloves over top so that you can still see green hands, but then your green hands are not rubbing off on anything else.
Yeah. I think I want to make it like a real illusion. I want to, make people wonder if it's like, is that her skin? Is it wet? Like I want that illusion to happen.
Right.
But I have ways of setting it. I'll just bring the makeup with me if I need to touch it.
This is me not knowing anything about makeup. Having never worn any, having like not even maybe as a vampire as a for Halloween as a kid, my mom would have put white makeup on me and I probably hated every minute of it.
that stuff's not comfortable though. It kind of burns.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't.
It's not comfy.
Not exactly my. Not exactly my thing. Well, I think we should probably move into the meat of the show, and this is where I get to have some fun and tell everybody to stop listening, and that is because we're going to talk about Wonder Woman. So, spoiler zone. There's not going to be any special segment at the end of the show. We're not going to even bother to attempt to do a spoiler-free review. I'm just going to say you should go see it. And we are going to talk about it now. So if you have not seen it, unplug your earphones, run for the hills. Actually, run to the theater and see Wonder Woman.
Then
come back. And then come back. So we're somewhere around 15 minutes into the show. Just mark your podcast app and then come back. Because I don't want to tiptoe around this. It's going to be too much fun to talk about. So there. Warning is out there. Everybody, hold on to your nuggets. I'm going to let you start. Because, well, one, I know you're
me.
Yes. Well, because... You're a giant Wonder Woman fan.
A little bit.
It's what?
I sit here and I'm looking at my Wonder Woman housecoat, my Wonder Woman bag with my Wonder Woman wallet and my two pairs of sneakers and even a couple mugs in my room. Four mugs. No, two mugs and two drinking glasses with Wonder Woman on it. I'm wearing a Wonder Woman t-shirt.
Yeah.
So a bit of an obsession.
It is not an accident that you're on the show. Also not an accident that just before the show you saw the film for the third time.
Yes, I literally ran up the stairs to my room. You were texting me saying, "Are you home yet?" And I had just gotten out of my third showing of the film.
So we have an expert in the house, so to speak, which is good. And there are a couple things that I definitely want to address, and that is I did not want to review Wonder Woman without having a female friend on the show to review it with me.
Thank you.
All the other co-hosts I have on all the other shows that I do are all dudes. And we catch ourselves all the time talking about, like, an issue will come up. You know, there'll be a comic book thing about a costume, or there'll be, a casting thing. And on the other show that I do, Comics Coast to Coast, we're actually doing a Wonder Woman show on that tomorrow night, too. It'll be a different perspective because, of course, it's got Brian and Matt and me. And we struggle a lot of the time to find female artist guests, and it's just numbers. I'm always looking for women artists to bring on the show, but it's hard sometimes to find someone that we haven't already interviewed, you know?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we get into, you know, different issues with comic books and the silly things that fans, you know, get into sometimes. And we try to state a balanced opinion. And ultimately, one of us always reminds the viewers, yep, this has been the opinion of three middle-aged white guys. Thanks very much for coming out. You know, because we look, you kind of have to put a disclaimer out there. So I mean, I'm a comic book fan. I'm a superhero fan, and I love the superhero movies and stuff. But I'm really happy to be able to have you on the show because I want to be able to be not necessarily put in my place, but I want to make sure that I'm in line when I'm talking about Wonder Woman because I have not read any comics. My experience with Wonder Woman, my experience with Wonder Woman comes from like Justice League cartoons. Any kind of mention in any of the other like current DC movies, of course, Batman v Superman, and then I think maybe some Justice League comics, but not many. Okay. And even then, it's a large story with five or six main characters, so she's not the focus, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of brings me into like where I am with my understanding of the character, but you having seen the film three times, so like what. What was your kind of initial reaction after seeing Wonder Woman?
I wanted to fight a bunch of people.
Nice. No, that's how I see after I watch Captain America. That's great.
Right?
Yeah.
So I've talked to a lot of people about it. I've gotten a lot of opinions from both men and women who've seen the movie. And the opinion I get from a lot of guys is, oh, I wish there'd been like a bit of a, you know, a hint of maybe the Flash movie or like Justice League or something. Right. And I was like, just let her have her own movie. You know, Flash is a TV show. Batman has multiple movies. Like, just let her have her own moment without influence of anyone else.
Yeah.
And a lot of the women I've talked to have also, they've gotten very emotional about it. Like, it's during the fight scenes, which is interesting. There's a scene called No Man's Land where, like, it's my favorite part of the entire movie with the costume reveal. Where she steps out of the barracks and starts walking across the ground. A lot of the women I talked to said they started to tear up at that moment because it was like, oh my God, there she is, finally.
Right.
There's Wonder Woman. And it was really, I don't know, seeing a female superhero completely save the day by herself, it's really rare. It shouldn't be like this big, you know, oh my God, groundbreaking sort of thing, but it is. It really, really is.
Yeah.
And that scene, actually, I do a lot of research. I research the hell out of stuff before I even talk about it, because I like to know what I'm talking about. Patty Jenkins, the director, she actually had to fight for that scene because they wanted to cut it. They're like, no, it doesn't make any sense. And she's like, no, it makes a lot of sense. Just bear with me.
Wow.
So she had to fight for that scene. Yeah. And it has been the most, of all the women I've talked to, they said that is the most impactful scene in the entire movie because it is the moment where Diana becomes Wonder Woman. That Ooh. Is the moment when you see the costume in all of its glory. You see her pull out everything, all of her Amazon training, her, you know, deflecting bullets with the bracelets. Like that is, you know, quintessential Wonder Woman in that moment. And that is the moment that Diana takes on that role. Mm-hmm. And it's really powerful. It's a really powerful moment.
Yeah. And something I like about what they did there is like, I got the same kind of vibe that I did when they have big hero moments from Captain America.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Like I'm it glad. Was, and it wasn't like I was comparing it to Captain America. It was that buzz of the fantastic score, you know, the swelling music. The business stance, like the put on the tiara and just like, I've got to do this, you know, like, and there was that moment of like, ooh, here we go, you know, you know, because I mean, it wasn't terribly long into the movie, but it was long enough that you're kind of like, okay, I know she's got that Wonder Woman costume on underneath the cloak. And the whole idea right now, I get it, is that the cloak is on, so there's no fighting. As soon as the cloak comes off, it's like the gloves are off, you know, and then here we go, right?
Here we go. Yeah, no, it was great. So I'll start off first like that. I'll start with that. But I'll start with my cons for the movie because there's way less of those than there are pros.
Right. Okay.
So there's definitely some technical issues with the film. I think we had talked about it really briefly. Some CGI moments. And
that's
there's
one of my big
ones
too.
I think. I think you mentioned it. I think last night or a couple days ago or something. And I made notice of it with like at the beginning with the Amazons. Like the very first shot of them. And I do know what you mean by that. But I think I was just too jazzed to see Amazons and awesome ladies fighting each other that I just didn't even notice. It was more like, this is happening.
part of that is the animator, you know, training that I have and it's hard to turn off.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to watch a movie like that knowing how they do a lot of the effects and seeing stuff like that happen, you're just like, wow, this is supposed to be like a DC benchmark movie, and this CG is not holding up. And I'm gonna say, like, yes, it's a con, but it's a something that lasts about 5 minutes, and then immediately thereafter, the characters, the prequel or the origin story kind of grab you, and you kind of stop caring. It's not enough to say like, oh, terrible movie, bad CG. There's some CG moments later on that are phenomenal. Like there's
right.
It's one of those things where you're just like, was this reshoots? Was this early on? Was this something that had to be out in a hurry? Like, I mean, you're also dealing with, you know, DC trying to put this movie out into a grand scheme schedule, you know, so you have to put Wonder Woman out before
Justice League.
And so that, so I get that there might be some limitations there. What it did for me was had me go, whoa, okay. Like I'm in the theater for 2 hours now, but like, gosh, I hope it's not like this the whole time. And it wasn't, at all. But I really noticed it right off the bat. There was a lot of these weird, I think the idea that they were trying to emphasize the acrobatics and abilities of Amazons and the fact that they can like lean backwards off of a horse and grab a spear that's stuck in the ground without losing their balance or any strength in the process. And I think there's two things there. One, yes, the CG was not the best, but they also just kind of explain to you what an Amazon is in like three lines of voiceover. So you're just kind of like, no, wait, these aren't people, right? These are Amazons, is an entire race of different kind of beings that were created by the gods to, I can't remember the exact line, but it was to bring peace and harmony to the human race or something.
Yeah.
Along those lines. So they're not humans, which means that they have extra human ability. So like when you go back and think about it, you're like, yeah, okay. So they're not supposed to, you look at it and they look like a person and you immediately go, a person can't do that.
Right.
You don't question that when you see Spider-Man, Superman, even Wonder Woman later, you don't question what she's doing because you know who she is. You know she's supposed to be able to do all these things. But because if you go into it as uneducated as I am in the Wonder Woman universe, and you look at these CG characters doing their thing, you're like, oh, right. Okay, so doesn't look great, but it's also not supposed to be a real person. It's supposed to be, you know, kind of an ethereal moment. So like, I can appreciate what they were trying to do. I just think that there's a little bit of execution that they fell off on there.
And I agree. I do agree. There's a couple moments, I think, with there's some, you know, odd editing moments, I think, that skewed pacing slightly. Like it's some that I have a film background as well, so I notice editing things. You notice the animation. Yep. I notice some of the editing. Yep. So there's a couple of pacing moments. Like this is me getting like really nitpicky. A couple of pacing issues with editing. Some CGI fight pacing felt a little bit off.
They crossed the axis.
For like a couple seconds.
Yeah, they crossed the axis in that no man's ladder climb. They're like, you're on one side of the ladder, you're on the other side of the ladder. It's like, no, she was
walking.
You know
what? I didn't mind that so much.
Yeah.
I didn't because that was kind of a whole new moment.
Mm.
I can forgive that one for an artistic license. But and then there was one major continuity error that I noticed featuring a beer mug. Did you notice that one?
I didn't.
Okay. So they're sitting on this, like, after the No Man's Land fight scene.
Yes. Okay. I know the scene you're talking about. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. They're kind of like, you know, Samir comes up and he gives them a mug.
Yeah. Diane and Trevor sit on a tank. Yeah.
Yeah. And she puts the mug down and then Steve pulls her up to dance and she puts the mug down again in a different spot. Yeah. That's one continuity error. That's like the one major one that I noticed of, you know, prop errors.
Yeah.
I'm wondering
because in that scene, I was probably looking at Steve. Like when he's talking to her and trying to get her to stand up and dance, I was probably watching him, not what she was doing.
Ah, Sarah's watching her.
That's what I mean. Like that. But I'm sure that all eyes, for the most part, I imagine a lot of the women that went to go see this movie, you're all watching those scenes from Wonder Woman's perspective, from Diana's perspective, you know? And I was looking at kind of like, I do find Chris Pine really charming. Like I find him an excellent actor and he's easy to watch in the movie. So I think I was like,
I do too.
I was trying to figure out like, I think I was just watching him kind of going like, okay, so this, now he's going to try and charm Diana. This ought to be cool. And so I was probably focusing on what he was doing and I wasn't looking at all at the beer mugs. Actually, what it made me, I wanted a glass of beer. I was like, man, sitting there with milk and cookies in the movie theater, like, man, when is Canada going to get movie theaters that serve beer?
Right? Right? Dang it. We need it.
So bad. You want that 4D experience, Cineplex?
Give me beer while I watch this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, instructions. No, I loved it. Yeah, crack your German beer at, you know, 45 minutes into the film, right?
Amazing.
Yeah.
No good. Yeah. But yeah, that was pretty much the only major continuity error that I could notice. Everything else, I think it was narratively almost perfect, I would say. I mean, there's a couple more, like the whole, like the gas that Dr. Poison had created for Ludendorff.
Right.
Like, you know, it's almost like a pill or something.
Like the little blue gas. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I talked about this with my roommate and she was just like, it was invented by like a, you know, a Greek god. Just go with it. You know, fantasy. Yeah. It's like, that's true. But I wish they'd explain more what it was. It know that it amped his power a little bit and it was very meant to be very misleading on who the villain was, because there's quite the villain twist in that, which I was not expecting at all, actually. Had no idea. Watching it again, for the second time, I was like, oh, okay. I see what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I caught it right away.
Did you?
But it wasn't like it wasn't at the very, very beginning. It was something that Diana was saying. She was going through the motions of like, oh, I figured out exactly who Ares is. I know where he is and who he is. And she was explaining all of the different reasons behind it. You know, the constant war, always in motion. Like there was a bunch of different things that she listed very quickly. And my mind went to, ooh, I can't remember the name of the character. He's played by the guy that was in Harry Potter. David Thewlis?
Professor Lupin. David Thewlis.
Yeah, Sir Patrick. So he plays Sir Patrick in the movie. My brain went to Sir Patrick. But then they did even more focusing on the guy, Ludendorff. They focused on him. So it wasn't like, I was like, oh, okay, maybe it's like, maybe it could be both. I don't know. And then, of course, my sci-fi, you know, comic brain kind of goes, well, maybe Ares is jumping from person to person. Like maybe, because she was so focused on like killing this one Ares guy, which did kind of strike me a little bit weird. I knew it was Amazon kind of focus, but it was also like, does Wonder Woman kill anybody? Like
she does. No, actually, that's a thing in a comic book. Actually, there's a comic book moment. I think she ends up killing someone or really severely hurting someone. The context eludes me, but I think Superman ends up getting after her for it because he's, you know, a very no kill as well. Mm-hmm. And she turns around and she's like, look, the reason why I don't have a big long list of villains to my name is because when I deal with them, I deal with them.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and she just deals with them. And I think, you know, she's a warrior. She's a fighter. And she knows, she's like, you know, yeah. That's her whole thing. It's like, I'm going to, you know, people who are not doing great, take them out.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. Warrior, you know, they started this fight. We're gonna finish it.
Yeah. I think it's probably just because most of my experience with Wonder Woman comes from the JLA cartoons, which they don't kill anybody.
No.
And that's, I mean, it's fine. But also a lot of times they're fighting either villains that can't be killed or it's a human villain like Lex Luthor.
Yes.
Right. So then you're, like you just mentioned, then you're in Superman's camp, you know, and she, even if she would have, she just wouldn't because Clark wouldn't have wanted it, you know, that sort of stuff.
I think she respects other people's battles too. Like she knows when people have to fight their own battles.
Yes,
so like,
yeah,
you know,
no,
she
I,
never,
yeah.
she's never like, oh, I'll take out the Joker and I'll take out Lex. Don't worry, guys. I got it. Cause she could.
Yeah.
But she doesn't cause she respects it's their issues to deal with.
Well, there's an honor thing.
Yes, exactly.
There's a lot of honor talk going on.
You know, she's nothing if not honorable.
Yeah, and there was a moment in the movie where this kind of struck me, where she was looking around and she was watching the other members of the team, Trevor and Samir and Charlie and all those guys, and they were all firing weapons and killing Nazis. But she was mostly lassoing people and punching people and doing stuff like that. And it wasn't clear to me if that was meant to be, I'm not killing anybody because all men are good and under the influence of Ares, or whether it was just the most efficient way for her to take on seven guys at once.
I think watching it again, I feel like she knocked them down a whole bunch. And I think it was to sort of give them a shot because, you know, it's not her war.
Right.
And, you know, her mission is, you know, first and foremost is to kill Ares. That's her mission. That is her job. and the mission of everyone else is to kill their enemies. So I think it was a strategic thing. I mean, if we want to get like really, really into it, like really, you know, get in depth into this and you know, what have you. But I do think that she, you know, she was focused on her own mission and all, but also trying to aid in their mission. But I think her sword was knocked out of her hands by that point.
That's
so I think it was the only thing she had on hand.
Yeah, that's right. And, so. And a lot of times too, maybe not in the scene that I'm thinking of, but in other scenes, I also noticed, setups where she would punch or kick or throw somebody into the line of fire of the other guys. You know, she'd set them up, you know, to be able to take out more people.
And I think that's Amazon training as well, because they fight very much as a unit.
Right?
Like, they're very unit fighters.
Maybe the look that I saw was her kind of like saying, like, this is my unit. Like, this is my battalion sort of idea.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to go see it again. And I think that I'll pick up a little bit more the second
you
time.
You do. I like to see movies more than once for that reason. Is one time just for pure enjoyment, and the next couple times, okay, let's get some of the detail.
It's not often that you get me to go to the theater twice.
Oh, this is good then.
You know, like I really liked it. I mean, I don't want to move on to us gushing about all the pros, because there's a lot of them. Before we get the con stuff out of the way, was there anything else that kind of rubbed you the wrong way? Any bit of the movie that you found was lacking?
No, not really. No, it mostly just some CGI, some pacing, and that one continuity error that bugged me. But other than that, no, I really enjoyed it. I really, really liked it. I was surprised by some of the cast too. Robin Wright as Antiope.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I didn't. Right? She's come so far from her Princess Buttercup days. It was it was kind of amazing to see like one of my childhood princesses now become a general. It's like falling back into like Princess Leia, you know, being a general in the, you know, Rogue One. Not Rogue One. Oh my God. The New Hope.
The latest seven. Episode seven.
Seven. Yeah. That's the one.
Wow.
Jesus.
Have you watched House of Cards?
No.
Okay.
I haven't gotten into that one yet. It's really hard for me to get into TV shows.
Yeah. Well, House of Cards is more than, I would say it's more than, I'm not even sure I would call it a TV show. It's a Netflix experience. Yeah. But I mean, Kevin Spacey is phenomenal, but Robin Wright plays his wife.
He's in it.
She plays the first, well, no, no, I want to give it away. She plays his wife, and he is in all manner of political stature throughout the series. And she is like wicked, and I don't mean wicked evil. I mean like
just wicked awesome.
Like strong with she has extraordinary presence. Like she can be.
I love her.
She can be vulnerable, but then she hates the fact that she's vulnerable, and then she crushes someone else to make her feel better. Like, you know, like it's
cutthroat.
Yeah. Cutthroat. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. And it's not always with ill intentions. Like sometimes she's doing it for charity, or she's trying to muscle her own way politically. Like there's all these different things that she does. But it was not a stretch at all for me to see her as Hippolyta. No.
Antiope.
Hippolyta is the queen. That's Diana's mom. Right. Okay.
Yeah. That's Connie something. I don't remember her
Nielsen,
last name.
Connie Nielsen.
Thank you.
Yeah. Gotta love IMDb open up on the second monitor. makes me feel smart.
No, I think, since we're going to be talking about actors now, like, Gal Gadot is, she was made for this role.
Yes.
She
could
is
not agree more.
Stunning. She's so stunning.
I'm glad you said it first, because I have to agree with you, and I didn't want it to sound like that's the only thing I noticed about her performance, but like,
oh God, no.
She is breathtaking.
She is a literal goddess on earth. She really is. She is amazing. She's gorgeous. She's smart. She has quite an interesting history too, like Gal as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Was Miss Israel. And apparently she was almost going to win Miss Universe. But she threw it because she didn't. She's like, no, this is dumb. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So she threw the Miss Universe pageant, which I thought was kind of neat. And in Israel,
she served in the military too.
Yeah. It's compulsory to serve at least 2 years in the military. So she was, her thought process was, well, if I'm going to do it, why not do it right? Why not do it really well?
Mm-hmm.
So she just blazed through all the training and ended up becoming, combat instructor and weapons consultant. for the Israeli military. And apparently the training for Wonder Woman was harder than her training for the military.
Wow.
It was like, she was like, she did, this is more intensive.
Wow.
And she, like, she trained for something like, I don't know, like 6 hours a day for like 6 months. Cause she's naturally thin. Like, she's a really thin woman anyway,
mm-hmm.
but her mission was to make herself like just a tank, like as buff mm-hmm. as possible.
Yeah.
But no, she was stunning. She's amazing. And I love that they made her, like, that's the thing about Wonder Woman is that she's, and what I loved about this movie was that she was still sexy, but not sexualized. Mm-hmm. There's a really fine line you can get between that. And there's a thing that a lot of, like, female critics have been saying about it is that there's a thing called the male gaze where, like, in a lot of other comic book movies, you know, I'm going to reference Black Widow for a second. There's a mm-hmm. lot of shots of Scarlett Johansson. She is also amazingly sexy and gorgeous. There's a lot of, like, you know, side profiles where, like, you see, okay, ample bosom or, you know, bunch of ass or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's all these shots that are, like, you know, very carefully selected to display the assets, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that was completely lacking in this movie. And it was for me, being accustomed to seeing that in most movies, having it not there was almost like a wake-up call. It was like, holy crap. This is so different from anything that I've ever seen before. And it's, and a lot of people wouldn't notice it, but I think to a lot of women, it's refreshing. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly refreshing.
Yeah.
And like the Amazon fight on the beach, that was literally like a female power fantasy.
Just,
it was like 300 for ladies,
yeah.
essentially.
Yeah,
it was,
exactly.
Right? It was, it was amazing.
Yeah. You know, that's a really good analogy because it does look like that. There's lots of slow-mo jumps and impossible shots you know, like the kind of like spinning three arrow at the same time kind of stuff that you would see.
Right.
But it's not just one hero person. It's all of them. Like all the major
yes.
speaking roles that you saw in the first act on Themyscira. When they're in that fight, all of them have something. Like there's the double dagger girl. There's I'm gonna get her name wrong.
Antiope.
She does some cool stuff. Diana does some cool stuff. Like there's all kinds of what's the word I'm looking for? Well, they're hero moments. It's the splash page in a comic book. You know, like seven times in one battle by seven different people, right?
And there's a bunch of moments. I just lost my train of thought.
Well, to speak to what you were saying about the non-sexualized kind of content, I think they did a really good job of that as well. I noticed it. And when I noticed it was the love scene, and I'm careful to say love scene, not sex scene.
Yes.
It was the love scene between Steve and Diana, and it was classic. It was classy. There was passion. There was poise. It stayed true to not only his character, because they addressed that really early on, but they also it also stays true to even the time period in which the movie is set.
Yeah.
In that, like, a kiss is just crazy intimate.
It is.
Right?
And I find that's usually thrown by the wayside a little bit. So the fact that it has put so much effort and finesse into that one kiss.
Yeah.
I feel like it meant so much more than a full-blown romance scene, right?
And the only thing that you get to see of Diana in that scene, of both of them in that scene, is head and shoulders.
Yeah, and it's great.
And you get to see Diana's shoulders the whole movie. Like, it's not like it's the special moment of reveal, like, aha, now I don't have my shirt on. It's like, nope. You had no idea whether she's still wearing her Wonder Woman armor or not, right?
It's true. Theoretically, she was. She just walked into the room at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
But, right? No, I know what you mean.
Yeah. It was great.
No, it was beautiful. It was a really beautiful moment. And actually, going about Chris Pine and Steve Trevor, I went in completely expecting to hate his character. Because comic book Steve Trevor and DC animation Steve Trevor, kind of a piece of shit. I'm not gonna lie. He's in the comic books. He's very much like he's written in, you know, when the comic books first came out in like the 40s. So he was, you know, he was the man's man, and he was, you know, a military man. He kept just saying, "Look, Dana, when are we getting married?" And she's like, "Never, because you're gonna make me stop doing what I want to do."
Mm.
And that was a thing. Like, you know, for years there, he was, you know, in comic book series, it was like, "When will Diana marry Steve?" And it was like, "Never," because he wants to make her stop doing this. So she was kind of rejecting the notion of, like, you know, traditional marriage. And in the comic book, no, sorry, not the comic book, the DC animated shows, there's a movie with Carrie Russell and Nathan Fillion as the voices of Diana and Steve. And one of the first things that Steve says, like, it's very, like, staged the same way as the movie. You know, he crash lands on Themyscira, and Amazons find him, and he's, you know, tied up with the rope of Hestia. And, you know, one of the first things, like, they say, speak your mind, what's on your mind? And his first words are, your daughter has a nice rack.
What?
Yeah, right? That's the first thing out of his mouth. His one, like, his honest truth is completely sexualizing Diana, and that, you know, and she gets embarrassed by it. She's like, no, this is, what are you doing? This is not cool. So the fact that, I don't know if that was Chris Pine's influence, or if it was Patty Jenkins, the director, or even the writer. I don't know if there was them reworking Steve's character, but a lot of fans who know the subject, or like the information, I guess, know that Steve's kind of, like, he was never really like a standout kind of character. Because of that. So I don't know what Chris Pine did with him was amazing. He was genuine. He was honest. He was, noble. He was, you know, he never belittled her and never said, you can't do this because you're a woman. It was just,
yeah,
you can't, cause no one can, like,
yeah,
you know, every time he told her no, it wasn't because you're a woman, you're not strong enough. It was, no, it's not. No one can do this.
Yeah. Well,
and then she just proved him wrong anyway.
Like, no man's land. Like, I mean, the line right before he's screaming at her to don't go up the ladder is, these men have been here for months and they've moved 6 inches.
Yeah.
Like, it's not you. You being here is not going to change anything. You can't change anything. And it's not like because you're a woman, it's because no one here can, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed, that aspect of his character. I thought it was fun, since we're talking about, like, the whole, like, sexualized thing too, I thought it was fun that the gratuitous, like, almost nude scene in the movie was Chris Pine getting out of the hot tub type situation in Themyscira and basically just holding his nuts, you know, and just kind of standing there, you know, pretty much full Monty and going, and I thought it was an excellent and still tasteful message, you know, to kind of say, like, hey, this would have been tits everywhere, you know, if it had been the flip, if it had been Wonder Man, you know, and something else like this, the whatever sexy actress, you know, cast number 5 would have been getting out of the pool and there would have been boobs everywhere. But in this situation, it, like, in order to not get, you know, a crazy rating, we have to, you know, have him cover himself. You know, there wasn't any... I don't think there was any. Was there a shot of his butt? I don't remember.
No,
I didn't.
One.
I didn't really pay close enough attention.
I took care to look.
Yeah, but yeah, but yeah, it was one of those moments where you definitely noticed that it was like one of those things that really stuck out to you. You know, like, especially once you got past that the love scene later on, you're just like, okay, no, this is great. And then you're thinking about it, like, wait a minute, like, I haven't seen any cleavage in this entire movie,
right?
Like,
I think the most cleavage you see is in her ballroom dress, and even then it's not even,
yeah,
you know it's in a ballroom dress, right?
Yeah, and all of it's in like the early 1900s, so I mean it's all kind of corsets and that kind of thing, but in that class, in that kind of type of party, it's not low-cut corsets, it's like the high neck stuff, a lot of very Well, there's the fashion montage there early on when she's like kicking and flipping a dress and stuff like that. A lot of the necks on things are right up past the Adam's apple. Like, it's way up, you know, it's way up, kind of like, she even comments about being choked by the damn thing. which, I mean, that kind of stuff was fun. There wasn't as many light moments like that in the movie as I thought there was going to be. My fear of all the jokes being in the trailers was pretty much true. There were some moments that weren't necessarily jokes that were really light, but and I'm glad they weren't in the trailer, because there was a couple things later on, like, I think when we were chatting last night you'd mentioned something about a baby.
Yeah, I love that moment.
Yeah,
I love it so much. She just gets so excited, just, a baby.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's because she was the baby for years. She's the only baby on Themyscira.
Yeah. The ice cream thing was what got me.
That moment is actually in a lot of media for Wonder Woman. It's been in a couple various DC animated films, and it's been in a few comic book issues as well.
Yeah.
It was actually staged in various ways.
Yeah, it was a pet peeve of mine in the new 52 Justice League animated things that they're doing, because I don't like them. Because they play Wonder Woman as this extraordinarily tough, almost non-emotional battle kind of person. And then
Are you referring to Justice League War?
Oh, I might be.
Yeah, because that's immediately sticking out in my mind. It's like she's fresh off the boat sort of deal.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, she's looking at this, you know, what is this fancy mechanical carriage? It's like, oh God, do we have to do this again? Like, it's not appealing at all. And there's a scene with an ice cream vendor in the park at night, I think, and she's going through this like, what is this fantastic treat? You, sir, should be, you know, proud, you know. And in this, in the way that they handled it in the film with Gal Gadot, it was just so much better. Like, she's as excited as a 5-year-old getting ice cream, you know, and it's so genuine. And then she turns around to thank the guy and tell him how proud he should be. And at the same time, you know, Trevor is trying to usher her into the train. Like, no, we have to go.
Let's go. Yeah. I love how Gal made her, there's always a sense of wonderment about Gal. Like, anything new that she saw, she still seems so young.
Which
was really interesting. Like, you know, when she first sees Steve, like, her face, she's like, you're a man. And it was like she just had this look of pure wonder on her face.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he's talking about, you know, the war, like, you know, she looks like a small child. It's just like, oh, my God, this sounds terrible. And just like all those little moments, you know, where she's realizing things for the first time. She looks so innocent.
Well, and it's something that I credit to just how good of an actor she is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's moments in the movie where you want to clash gauntlets with her and go like, that was awesome, you know, like,
right,
you know, like, you kick ass, yeah. And then there's other times where you just want to hug her and tell her everything's going to be okay,
right,
you know. And it's a combination of like her facial expressions, all the subtlety that goes into really, really good acting, and body language. It was something that Steve Reeve was really good not Steve Reeve Christopher Reeve was really good at.
Reeves, yeah.
when he would pop from, you know, hunching down an inch or two as Clark Kent, and he would take off his hat and stand up straight. And he would literally just, he wouldn't even have to take off his shirt and tie. He would be like, oh, now he's Superman. And, I could feel like there's a lot of that happening with Gadot in the film, where she would just, or Gadot, I'm saying that wrong. It's Gadot, right?
Gadot, yeah.
Yeah, Gadot. So, like, the moments in that where she's so genuinely hurt by the general's lack of response to, you know, the main plot of the movie, which is the mustard gas, you know, distribution. And she's just genuinely, you know, heartbroken. You know, like, she's angry, but she's
livid.
Yeah, she's angry, but she's angry in a, she's almost crying. She's so angry. You know what I mean? Like, she's in disbelief, I think is the best way to put it. And that happens in a number of different, you know, places throughout the movie, where she realizes that maybe it's not Ares. Like, maybe all men really are, or a lot of men really are twisted and capable of great evil. And I think that they really did an excellent job, both with her, it's her acting for the most part, but the script itself actually does a really good job of conveying the message in the movie, you know, the horrors of war, the mysteries of evil men, hopelessness in the face of tragedy. Because when they go back, like after they save that village, after the village fight, was it No Man's Land?
Yeah.
They save the village, and then they, you know, that there's all these moments, they celebrate with the villagers. There's the lovely moment with Steve and Diana. Then they go on, and they're at the gala, and at the gala they launch the mustard gas and they kill everybody in the town. Not they, the Germans do.
Yeah.
And then she has to go back. And then there's this like just immense sadness and like, what is it all for? You know, kind of moment. And you feel for Diana and you feel her confusion and you feel all of that. But then you also, I was immediately thinking about world events and, you know, London and like all these different things that have happened recently. And
it's so relevant.
Oh, it's extraordinarily relevant. You know, it's like, holy crap, has nothing changed in 100 years? And again, that's a line from Batman v Superman that Wonder Woman says, you know, and it's really kind of came full circle to the point where you're just like, you almost feel like in this movie, for some wonderful reason, pardon the pun, the producers didn't get their mitts on it.
And I'm so thankful.
You know what I mean?
I'm so thankful for that.
Like, there's some real artistic statements happening in the film.
There are. And that was actually a thing that Patty had said. It's interesting that you say artistic, because a lot of people were bashing her for making it too cheesy. Oh, it's, you know, oh, love will save the day. And it's like, well, you know, yeah, no, it might.
It's not that, but this is the thing. It's not that love that saves the day. It's that Wonder Woman believes in good and love and just, and she's going to save the day. And I think that's what people are not getting. Because I had that moment too, where I was like, okay, you know, there's that moment where Steve gets into the plane at the very end, and it is an amazing little piece of film where she's shell-shocked and she can't hear what he's saying, and neither can you, but you know what he's about to do, and you know he's trying to say something important, and you're just like, oh God, are we not going to know what he says? And they do eventually go back to it. And I wasn't disappointed, but I was almost like, man, this would have even more impact if the last time that she saw Trevor alive was, and she had no idea what he said, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it would have been too much. It meant a little bit more, I think, having heard, being able to go back and hear what he says later on, and not so much a flashback. It's more like she realizes her powers and she could hear him, but she didn't realize she could hear him, sort of thing.
Yes. I know where you're coming from with that. I definitely think that, you know, I don't know. What I love about her so much is that her power is, it comes from her emotions and her affection for people.
Yes.
Like the moment when she decides, no, like when she becomes like that, you know, demigod embodiment.
Oh, man.
At the very end there.
And that was some of the best special, like that was some of the best super moments in the film, period. Like it was,
oh my God,
wicked. It reminded me of the scene back from Man of Steel when he is in Smallville and he's fighting on the ground and he's doing his super speed, and the way that they handled the super speed.
Yes.
You know, and it wasn't like she was speeding around. But like they just kind of went from like power move to power move to power move, and she was just like taking out Nazis like left, right, center. It was wicked.
Oh God, yeah. I don't have any words to convey.
Yeah.
Just how like, but it's every single fight moment. Again, going back to what I said earlier, every single fight moment that I was watching her fight, it was like I was getting choked up. I was like, there she is.
Yeah.
Like, and people are seeing it, and I feel like people are like, my brother, I never really understood why I liked Wonder Woman so much. He's like, oh, she's, you know, just whatever, you know. And if you go like back through her credentials, you know, she's apparently, the bracelets are on there to keep her power in check, because if she takes them off, she could destroy a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
She's beaten Superman a couple times, like literally handed his ass to him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's tough. And after the movie, he was here. He just dropped me off at home before the show. And as he was driving, he was like, I get why you like her so much. Like, I understand now. Mm. And I think that meant more to me than anything else, because it was like, okay, people are finally seeing what's so great about her.
Yeah.
But I also think she's under more scrutiny than anything else, right? Like, you know, a lot of people are really nitpicking certain aspects of this movie a lot, that I don't think they would nitpick as much for other heroes.
No.
But I'm glad that she's basically single-handedly carrying the DC movie universe on her back now.
That is
giving me a lot of hope for DC.
Yeah, and I still have a bad taste in my mouth from Batman v Superman, but
yeah.
I do enjoy Man of Steel. Not necessarily all of it, but like there's certain aspects of it. And I think what I can pull away from that is that I like watching Henry Cavill as Superman as much as I like watching Gal Gadot in as Wonder Woman.
Yes.
It's like it's more at that point you're like, okay, movies, you know, for Man of Steel, you're like, it's not a fantastic movie, but he's a fantastic Superman. So you just kind of just focus in on that, right? Because I mean, the moment you're talking about with like with the end of the movie here, when she fights Ares and there's all these kind of cool stuff going on, when she gets really super, And then the reveal at No Man's Land, like that's the same feeling that I get when the pebbles on the ground start going in the north, when Clark takes off for the first time and doesn't fall.
Yeah.
Like when he really takes off and breaks the sound barrier and it's like, boom, Superman, you know, like those are the kind of moments that you dream of when you're five and you're obsessed with Superman. So when you see that kind of stuff happening in Wonder Woman, and like I mentioned earlier, when I have that feeling of like, this feels and has that same swell as like a Captain America moment when he's holding a helicopter or like all this kind of stuff. And I think that, well, I mean, one of the reasons it's under so much scrutiny is, I think, because of a lot of the stuff that just is happening in media lately in general, but also this, it's Wonder Woman's first solo movie. Like it's the first, there's not even any, I don't think there's any other Marvel female characters that have a solo movie either.
No, there's no. None. That's the thing. It's like, you know, we were petitioning for, you know, a Black Widow movie, because Black Widow has a very, very interesting backstory. I don't like what was written in for her in the second Justice League film, or, you know, like the forced sterilization crap. I thought that was bullshit.
I thought that was bullshit. Yeah, the romance between her and Banner.
Yeah, that was so uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, the second Avengers movie is not amazing.
Yeah, no, did I say Justice League movie that one time? I feel like it did. I meant the second Avengers movie. I may have said Justice League that one time. You know where my brain's at. But, right? But no, I don't know. A lot of fans, because I'm a fan of both. Like, I'm an equal fan of both of them. I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I do like a lot of the Marvel comic books. I think my comic book love is going to be DC more. I find them a bit more, personally, a bit more iconic. Like, when you see the trio of Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, that's such an iconic little trio you have there. I feel like even more so than most of Marvel stuff. But I'm not saying that I dislike Marvel, because I do like it a lot. But we were a lot of fans were like, hey, like, we really want a Black Widow movie. That was a big thing that everyone was talking about. And then they announced Ant-Man. Then we were like, oh,
yeah,
this is nothing of what we wanted. It was a great movie. I didn't mind Ant-Man so much. Yeah. But it was sort of disappointing to have that when everyone's like, please do a Black Widow movie. Please, we want it. And the fact, you know, this is the first, I think, female superhero movie that's been out possibly ever, at least within the last 10 years or so.
I'm struggling to remember anything, and I feel like there might have been, I mean, Aeon Flux wasn't really a superhero movie.
Yeah. There's like Catwoman with Halle Berry, but
that was also terrible.
Yeah, it was not great.
Like, I couldn't even get through 20 minutes of that.
Yeah, it's not great.
I feel like there's been strong female characters, but they've either been villains or they've been part of a cast.
Exactly.
Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know, but like, it's an iconic role, but not a lead. Like, not a lead and not a hero.
And that's why I think this movie is so important for a lot of women, because, you know, it's finally, you know, there's someone who looks like us who is not being written as a side character or not as a romantic subplot, or who's not underwritten. Because sometimes you have that threat of, you know, women in some media. I mean, like, you know, you have Lois Lane, who's, you know, she's, you know, the support for Superman. And, you know, but why is she a journalist? You know, we know that she's a journalist and that she's really hella good at it. But why is she a journalist? What made her want to become that?
Yeah.
I
find you do get
Rachel from Batman.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I find you do get more of the Lois Lane from any of the versions of Superman that have been televised.
Right.
Like any of the Smallville or trying to think about it, like Lois and Clark. Like you had time to get to know that character a little bit more, whereas in the movies you really don't know much. Well, and you get a little bit of that. They did a good job of that with Chris Pine. Like, he's not just a love interest. Like, he's obviously got a purpose, and there's some really important moments that they bring back. And I love, this is the thing, something I mention on this show all the time, that I really dislike about DC TV, is that they beat you over the head with every little important plot point. You know, like, if a character is talking about something in particular, whether it's, you know, this device or the timing of this thing, they mention it like 8 times in the course of 20 minutes. And you're like, okay, I get it. You have to stop the bomb. The bomb's bad. Go for it. Just stop talking about it and maybe save the day. You know, but in this, it's like there's a moment, and I think it's even like distracted by the fact that Chris Pine is naked when he talks about his dad's watch, why he has it. You get the impression that his dad is gone, and that it's important to him. The yeah. next time you see that watch is the end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, when he gives it to Diana. And then it does show up at the very, very end when they do flashback to the present day when Diana's in the Louvre and she's got the watch with her. But like, yeah. it is hella important to her memory of Steve, to Steve's character, to what, you know, him giving the watch to her meant, all of it. Yeah. And they only mention it twice.
I know. And that's a sign of really good writing.
Exactly. Like it means that you're paying attention both times. Like you remember how important it was when they were talking about it. And again, because Chris Pine gets sad and he starts to talk about his dad and he kind of drifts off and he doesn't finish the sentence. And so you're like, okay, something important there. That's obviously really important to him. But like, yeah. what I'm glad for is that, you know, if this was a DC television show, he would have talked about the watch around the campfire. He probably would have talked about the watch when they were having beer, or there would have been a joke about it, you know, whether he talked about it or one of his friends joked about, oh, you still got that old watch? Like, it would have been mentioned yeah. like five more times before the end of the movie, to the point where at the end of the movie, you would have been like, oh, cool, here's where he gives her his watch. Like, you predict what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And you don't do that, you know, because of the way that they handled all those different important points in this movie, they really kind of let you draw your own conclusions. And when something important is happening, it's happening for you at the same time it's happening for the characters. You don't yeah. get there ahead of time. And it has so much more like weight.
It's almost like a less is more sort of situation.
Oh, absolutely. I think 100%. I think, unfortunately, a lot of times television producers and movie producers are talking down to their audience. They don't give people enough credit. They really right. don't. And it's too bad because like film in general could be a lot better. I'm even struggling, you know, you're talking about female leads and main characters and stuff like that. I'm struggling to think of a big main character for Marvel that's a female that would be, well, sorry, that's a lie. Captain Marvel, she's Marvel, right? She's a Marvel character.
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
Yes. Yeah. So she hasn't had her movie yet.
I hope she does.
Yes, yeah, so it's happening. They've cast her. I can't remember who they cast.
Oh, have they?
But it's, oh yeah, it's fantastic. It's a great casting too. I'm blanking on her name. But like, so that's the only character that I can think of from that comic franchise, like the Marvel, that's not part of a team, you know, like,
yeah,
I mean, granted, I agree that Black Widow could have a really cool movie, but I know like she tends to be identified more as part of a team. You know, I know
she does, but she has her own comic run that's actually very stellar.
Yeah.
It really goes into her backstory a lot. I think she's like out of all the Avengers, the only two Avengers that have not had their own films are Hawkeye and Black Widow. And I actually mm-hmm. find it very interesting that Hawkeye doesn't have his own film because Jeremy Renner is very well loved. And I think he's more than on board.
Oh yeah. He's been very vocal about it in interviews about yeah. doing that. Yeah. And I think it would be good. I enjoy his Hawkeye quite a bit.
There's a moment in the first Avengers where they keep talking about Budapest. I want to know what happened in Budapest. I want to know
yeah.
what was going on yeah, in Budapest. Yeah, yeah. I still wonder. That still keeps me up at night sometimes.
Yeah.
What happened in Budapest?
Well, and that would be an excellent, you know, either an opening to a Black Widow movie or a Hawkeye movie where
right?
you have the bay of the dropship opens and then it just kind of pops up the little location text on the bottom of the screen, Budapest, you know,
Budapest
1997.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Finally. Yeah. You know, I love this movie. Any listeners who are still listening, you go see it. It is a magical experience, especially if you're a woman. It's like, it is. Literally all of my dreams came true in that 2.5 hours of that movie. Like everything I could have ever wanted from a Wonder Woman movie happened, I think. And I like how they incorporate elements because her backstory has been kind of changed here and there throughout comic books. Like they do reference, you know, made from clay, brought to life by Zeus. That is actually, I think originally it was Hera.
Which would make sense. Yeah.
In the New 52 reboot, which I actually don't mind so much. I know that there's some issues with it for sure, but I don't hate it. She is revealed to be a demigod, and she actually, you know, she kills Ares in the comic books, the more recent ones. I think she's killed him multiple times.
I feel like in the cartoons, Ares has always been imprisoned, you know, indefinitely. Like the defeat wasn't death because it's a cartoon.
Yes.
And I'm remembering Hera as well. I'm remembering like a statue of Hera somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, Hera was kind of the one responsible for, I think, creating the mascara. But right. I think for mass audiences, Zeus is a bit more commonly known, which yes. I don't mind
yeah, I don't
at
mind
all.
Either.
I think that's kind of great. But no, actually, in the DC animated movie of Wonder Woman with Carrie Russell and Nathan Fillion, she beheads him in the most glorious fashion. It's amazing. And like animated beheading, it was kind of excellent. No, it was I like how they reference the fact that, you know, like, yes, made from clay, brought to life by Zeus, as I said before. But in the comic books, she was revealed to be the daughter of Zeus. Like, she is Zeus's, you know, she's a demigod, literally, mm-hmm. in the comic books now. And it comes to the point where when she defeats Ares, she is now the god of war. Diana is the god of war now.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is really, really interesting. And there's a side comic, Superman and Wonder Woman, where they're a couple, which I actually really like. I like that dynamic a lot. It's very interesting. But he does end up asking her about it, you know, because he's kind of weird about war. He's weird about fighting. And she's like, it's not, you know, I realized it's not so much, you know, starting wars, it's controlling war. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to control war to make sure it does not happen again. So she's kind of taking it in a different way, which I think is kind of nice. Yeah. But that's the last of the comic books that I've read. I haven't read too much of it. But
so, and this, and I've got a question about all that too, because I did kind of, from pop culture in general and my limited Wonder Woman experience, know that she was a demigod. But I'm a little sketchy on her powers. So from what I'm getting from the Amazons is that they're not bulletproof. I don't necessarily know that Diana is either, but I don't think she has to be because she's just so good with the bracelets.
I think it's a combination of both. But she is a demigod. The Amazons are not.
Right.
So the Amazon, she is, she, because they mentioned that a few times in the story. It's like, you know, she must never know
who
she is or where she came from, and she's different. And, you know, when she, you know, they're fighting with Antiope at the beginning, when you first see Gal as Diana, as young Diana.
Yeah.
You know, she Gal calls it the boosh, where she puts her, you know, fists together. She calls it the boosh. It's great. And then she actually said that in a couple of interviews. She's like, I love Diana's boosh. And everyone's like, what? And she's like, no, like the boosh. it was really funny.
Yeah, with her accent, barrier. That would be yeah. It's like getting in Australia to talk about his deck, like his wooden deck outside of his house. You'll end up with a very odd word that does not really sound like, you know, a veranda, you know. But then there was another interview where I think it was Jimmy Kimmel where he mentions he's a comic book nerd and he was going to launch he was going to launch into the colors of the costume and the style of the costume being very different.
I watched this interview.
And she cut him off and she goes, oh, really? What do you think about my boobs? And he kind of goes, he was not ready. And he turns about 8 shades of red.
She is no shame, that woman.
Yeah, she's got a lot of character. I really enjoy her. She's very genuine, I find.
She is.
You know, like her interviews are very just like, holy crap, I got the role of Wonder Woman. Like, you know, I there was the two interviews that I watched were Jimmy Kimmel and The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Just clued in that they're both Jimmys. That's weird. no, I really enjoyed her talk with Jimmy Fallon because she drops an F-bomb live on TV. It's hilarious.
I saw that. She's crap.
And
she's her favorite curse word, apparently.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you're just like, oh, I'm European. I'm so sorry. You know, like,
oh, she's so good. Yeah, no, she is really genuine. And I follow her on Instagram and she's been, you know, just like Instagramming about it so much. And a lot of like the celebrity reaction to this film, Chris Hemsworth, who plays Thor, mm-hmm. he actually said, he's like, damn, I really think that Diana could kick Thor's ass. And she was like, I know you were a smart man, you know, and she just comments on stuff like this all the time. But no, she's so excited. And she calls it the baby. She's like, now that the baby's out, I'm glad you can all enjoy it. And, you know, I think she's so enamored by this, which is really exciting. Cause you see some celebrities who are kind of just like, yeah, no, movie's out. It's great. It's fine. Whatever. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, it's out. We can talk about it. And she gets really stoked. Yeah. She was actually, They had one scene of reshoots, and that was like right before No Man's Land and right after, I think, the ice cream scene, that scene where they're walking through the trenches in the mud and everything. And it's kind of like, you know, they see, like, you know, the horses being whipped and, mm-hmm. You know, the guy wounded and the children, you know, looking for his mom. And she was like, I want to help them. I want to help everyone. And everyone's like, no, like, we got to keep plowing through. And she's mm-hmm. like, but I can help all this. I think that was one moment that they had to reshoot. I guess Patty was saying that, you know, I want the stakes to be higher. I want Diana to see the horrors of this. She's only seeing like the aftermath horrors and not in the midst of it horrors. But Gal Gadot was 5 months pregnant during that scene. And I think she was 5 months pregnant shooting some of Justice League as well.
Yeah, there was a part of the interview where she's talking to Fallon where she says like they gave her basically a green screen skirt that went over her belly. So then they then could edit it out. If it happens to pop in the frame, they can kind of just, you know, use, you know, Hollywood magic to kind of fix it. But she says it's really funny to see like the dailies where she's like being all tough and they've got this shot of her having just like knocked somebody over. And it's the shot is just the close up of her and her reaction. The action scene has already been filmed when she wasn't 5 months pregnant. But then they cut back out to match up to the shot. And she's standing there looking tough with this great, like the big belly sticking out. you know, big green belly. So she said that watching the dailies is really funny because, you know, it kind of, it's this weird perspective of like from shoulders up, it just looks like everything's normal. But then when you pull back out, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Something is different here.
No, it was good.
Yeah. And can Wonder Woman fly in the comics?
Okay. That's been some more speculation. So her powers have changed a little bit throughout the course of time. Originally she couldn't. And that's where the invisible jet came from. But then,
I was gonna ask about that.
But I guess as time went on, artists were just, because there was like, it was really dumb, the whole concept of the invisible jet, because it's like, all right, you see the invisible jet is obviously invisible, but she is not, so you just see this woman in a sitting position just flying through the sky, and it was dumb and it was silly. So they called that, I guess they amended it, like retconned it in one comic book and said, oh, it's crystal mode, and then there's full invisible mode. And they actually do reference the invisible jet in a couple of DC animated films, like Justice League animated shows and stuff. And apparently it's just like they had like a cloaking feature that was just damaged and it was just permanently disabled. And she was like, oh, I'm going to keep it. It's great.
Yeah.
But no, she can fly. In later comic books, they've amended the fact, yes, she can fly. So she essentially has most of the abilities that Superman does, aside from, you know, laser vision. You know, I don't think she really has any weaknesses, apparently, in the comic books, because she was, you know, created by a guy who had a bondage fetish, apparently. I found this out recently.
Oh, really?
So that was her one weakness, was if a man tied her up, that was her one weakness.
Huh.
And they quickly retconned that right away, too, because now she's getting out of all sorts of precarious situations. Yeah. But no, I don't really think she has a legitimate weakness. She is just, she's a demigod.
Yeah.
Right? It's like Thor. Doesn't really have a weakness either. He just, his weakness is that he gets to and over his head.
Yeah. I'd imagine that one of Diana's weaknesses would be the same as Superman, is that, you know, the villain would then crash two different planes at the same time in two different parts of the world. And like, you can, you can only be in one place no matter what kind of a god you happen to be.
Right.
And I think that would be the Achilles heel.
Yeah, it's more of like emotional weakness versus physical.
Yeah,
you know, Superman has that emotional and physical weakness of, you know, kryptonite.
Kryptonite, yeah. Right? Your compassion is your shortcoming, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing for Diana.
I think it's
important to have, you know, it's, I like that heroes have compassion, because it gives them a drive. And I think that moment, you know, right before No Man's Land, where she see, like, the reason she becomes Wonder Woman in that moment is because as out of compassion. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, these people are dying and they're slaves, and I know I need to stop all of this. This is crap.
Yeah.
But I just, that sequence didn't mean, every time I see, I've seen the movie 3 times, you know,
mm-hmm.
and today, like, every time I teared up today, I actually shed a couple of tears about it. And I was like, there's my girl.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see her.
Something that I really like about the way that they handled all of that is that there's never, like, there's the moments where Steve Trevor is trying to stop her, or, you know, stop her from drawing attention to themselves or being embarrassed, or trying to stop her for her own safety and or whatever. And it's all before he realizes that she can do what she does, because he is looking at her like, okay, so she's one of these Amazons. I watched them get shot. You know, like, they die. I get that. So he's, you know, he doesn't realize quite yet that she's more than that. And there's a couple of great moments later on where she's like, you know, I'm going in, you guys stay here, or you guys follow behind, something like that. And all the guys look at Steve like, what is she doing? And he's just kind of like, just let her do her thing. And, you know, and there's really, really cool, you know, spots like that. And I feel like they did the character justice.
Who is Steve or Diana?
No, Diana, sorry.
Yes.
No, Wonder Woman. They I mean, it's kind of like a wrap up thought. Like they did the character justice in the film. I think it's a really solid movie. I don't know how that's going to translate into Justice League, like looking ahead. I've seen enough in the trailer of Justice League that has me very worried. It doesn't look nearly as strong as Wonder Woman. I don't know whether they have time to learn any lessons from this, but like I hope that the producers learn a lesson in that, and I hope that it does well, because ultimately critical reviews are one thing, but I mean Hollywood is a business, and if you want more movies like this with more strong female characters like this that aren't like sexy spy murder fests, which I'm going to get into in a bit, but like that are genuine and like the kind of things that we see in Spider-Man, Captain America, Superman, like, but female roles. If you want more of that, whether it's an existing comic book character, like for example, Captain Marvel, you know, if you want more of that, then I'm hoping that this does really well financially and that there's enough of a reason for people to say, oh, okay, so when we don't interfere with the director as much as we normally do, when we let them do something like this, and it has a financial success, then there should be more of that and less Pirates of the Caribbean 7 or whatever the hell is out right now. You know, like for all the money that goes into those things, they could be funding projects that have much more meaning.
They do, for sure. And Patty's actually broken a couple records with this film, because it's the first female lead film, superhero film. It made like over $1 million at the box office in its first weekend.
I believe it.
And she is the number one movie in the world right now. It is the number one movie in the world. And Patty is the first female director to, aside from, I think, the woman who directed 50 Shades of Grey, which was abysmal. I won't get started. we'll leave it there. She has directed the highest grossing movie that is featuring a female lead directed by a woman in the world. Wow. She's broken. She's like, you know, she's blown the top off, you know, all these limitations. And I really hope that it does pave the way for more female directors and more, you know, it was a mostly female crew, and, you know, it was, you know, definitely, it was amazing. And like, you know, going back to the Amazons for a second, there was women from all walks of life. There were, you know, boxers, and there were fighters, and, you know, professional CrossFit trainers and models, and, you know, all these amazing women of all different shapes and sizes and colors, and you know, to have a lot of representation in various forms was really stunning. Mm-hmm. And also touching on you know, things like with Samir and Charlie and Chief, like they talk about you know, Chief's, you know, the you know, issue of colonization. Mm-hmm. Just in a couple of words, just in a few words, like, you know, who took that from your people? His people. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the shortest little moment, but it was like, oh, it had so much weight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Charlie with his PTSD and Samir wanting to be an actor, but he's the wrong color.
Yep.
Just important little things like that that is touched on, you know, again, less is more. It's like those small little moments are far more powerful than anything else. I hope that this gives people a lot of lessons and they follow suit.
No, and I like the fact that it illustrates that they didn't want to make Americans the clean hero.
Yes.
Right. So that one line from Chief like takes them down a notch, right? So she gets that she likes Steve Trevor, but not that he and all of his people are good, right? He's good, but not necessarily everybody, you know, like, and that was the message that I got from that.
Yeah.
I think everybody should go see it. I think it's definitely worth going to see in theater, because it's definitely a lot of action. Just a great theater experience. I didn't talk enough about it, but I think the score is also fantastic too.
Oh, I downloaded the album, and so many women I've talked to are just like, you know, they feel like if they can't do something, it's like, I'm just going to throw in the Wonder Woman soundtrack and I'll be fine. I can do anything now.
Yeah. I really enjoy the theme from the Batman v Superman soundtrack. The track is called Is She With You? And it's the main Wonder Woman theme. But it's different on the Batman v Superman soundtrack because it's a lot more intense because it's all battle scene at that particular point.
Mm-hmm.
That theme is still throughout the Wonder Woman album, but it's not quite as she's like this one track is just go, go, go from start to finish.
I mean, she's had like 100 years to get her anger built up to that moment, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's pretty cool. All right. Well, I guess we should wrap up and move on. But I'm glad that we had an opportunity to talk about Wonder Woman. And we actually have some more comic related stuff coming in the Internet Minute. And that's brought to you by you. Go to patreon.com/thesigilcafe. That is where you can actually help the Sigil Cafe keep going by supporting us financially on Patreon. You can help us pay for things like new audio equipment or hosting fees, anything that comes along with putting some time in to create a weekly podcast for you guys. So check out patreon.com/thesigilcafe. It's completely up to you. And if you do decide to become a patron, then you get in on the patron-only Slack chat. And that is a Slack chat room for people that are members of the Patreon group. It's a fun place. Everybody kind of hangs out, talks about different movies. There's going to be a lot of talk about Wonder Woman, I'm sure, once everybody has been up to speed. We do kind of wait for everybody in the Slack to have seen it before we really let loose on it. But it's going to be a lot of fun. So check out patreon.com/thesigilcafe. My pick this week is pretty short. It is actually a trailer that was in front of Wonder Woman. I happened to see it a couple days before, based on another comic book called Atomic Blonde. And it's the second trailer. I didn't know this movie was coming out until I saw the trailer for this. And it also looks like a really cool kick-ass female lead movie. Not a lot of honor and virtue happening in this particular film. But I do like Charlize Theron. And it looks like, if I was to compare it to something, it looks a little bit over the top as far as the action goes. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It kind of reminds me of a John Wick, but with a female lead.
Okay. All right. I actually didn't see that trailer. I had different trailers. I went to go see it with the IMAX experience.
Oh, okay.
I went all out for Wonder Woman two times. But no, tell me more.
From what I can tell, actually, if to draw a comparison, she basically looks and sounds like Black Widow before Black Widow became a superhero. This Charlize Theron plays, I can't remember the name of the character, she's a spy. She's a hand-to-hand combat expert. But they show her taking on, like, basically she's fighting men the whole time, and kicking their butts, but we're talking like killing them, like guns and knives and kicking people downstairs and smashing heads with stuff. And it's a pretty rough movie. Like there's a lot of shots of her being really beaten up. There's a shot of her getting out of an ice bath because and her back is all covered in bruises and stuff like that. Yeah. It's not a superhero movie. It's more of just a spy fight action film. But it looks really, really good. Not for kids though. It's pretty violent. I watched the Red Band trailer, cause I was looking for the link for this trailer and I ended up watching the Red Band trailer before the show. And it's pretty graphic. So it's like, it feels to me like a spin between, John Wick and what was the, Taken with Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of character she plays. Like, she plays this kind of calm, collected, I'm going to kill you before you hit the floor kind of, you know, kind of character. So check it out. I think it looks like it's going to be another good movie to see. And like I said, it's just nice to see kind of female action roles.
And Charlize Theron is just...
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. She's also a good actor. Like
she's a great actor.
Yeah, like, well, she's the Academy Award winner. You know, like that kind of stuff is... I'm glad that these roles are going to the best actor for the job and not the best body for the job, you know, the best looks for the job. Like, I mean, these roles... Because you could give Atomic Blonde to, like, whoever looks the most like whatever dude drew the comic. You know? And I say that not knowing. It could be a comic drawn by women, I don't know. But they could try to cast, you know... I'm trying to think about, you know, the who's the girl that's always Megan Fox?
Oh God.
You know, and she's terrible. You know,
not great.
No, but that's the kind of character that's the kind of stereotype that would have been cast in this movie 7 to 10 years ago, maybe 5 years
yes.
ago.
Yes.
But no, we're seeing a shift in the other direction. So, and that's why this interests me.
I like that we're seeing older women play yeah. roles like this,
how
too.
Because, like,
you know, I think she's in her late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah, because Godot is,
if she's
is
listening,
32.
I really apologize because, sorry. You know, she's probably yeah. not that old.
Yeah.
But
Godot
she
is
looks
32.
Fantastic. Yeah, Charlize. Godot's young. Like, she's,
yeah,
you
she's,
know.
She's younger
she's
than me.
She's pretty young.
I know that. I'm just curious now. Oh, well, okay. No, Theron is in her early 40s.
Okay.
Because
okay,
she's
I was
only...
way old.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm, well, you know who I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of Kate Beckinsale.
Okay.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Right.
Who's, I think, in her late yeah. 40s, early 50s.
So, yeah, Charlize Theron was born in 75.
Okay.
And I was born in 79. So she's only 4 years older than me.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's 42. And I'm just, and you said Kate Beckinsale?
Yeah, she's in the new Thor movie coming out. Ragnarok.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're thinking about.
Oh, she looks so
no,
good.
No, Kate Beckinsale is from the werewolf movies. You're talking about Kate Blanchett.
Kate Blanchett. Oh God.
Yeah.
Kate Blanchett.
Because Beckinsale is 73. Is like it's 1973. So she's 40. She's 44. And then Kate Blanchett, pardon my Googling on Mike here. So she was born in 69. So she's 10 years older than me. So she's almost 50.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no, she looks hot in the
great.
New Thor movie. Yeah, I mean, I don't
oh
mind
my
saying
God.
That. Yeah. No, there's, and there's another woman that is a phenomenal actor in The Subtlety. I mentioned it when we talked about the Thor trailer on the show. There's a moment where she, before she crushes the hammer, where she kind of flashes her eyes, and it's the subtlest thing, but it's amazing.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's your pick this week?
My pick this week is a comic called Skin and Earth by Lights. Lights is my favorite musician. I've been following her since, I think, almost the start of her career. When she was just on YouTube, and she is kind of, you know, of the age of MySpace and YouTube and mm-hmm. the beginnings of it. She's, you know, I think my love of comic books was really sort of bolstered, I think, by Lights, because she, you know, she's a self-proclaimed nerd, also really loves Wonder Woman, like really, and, you know, she'll, you know, dresses, she cosplays occasionally, and mm-hmm. she's amazing. But she's created this comic book called Skin and Earth, and most of what we've seen of it so far, she has the first 12 pages on her website, skinandearth.iamlights.com. But most of the information about it right now is on Instagram. So there's actually like an Instagram, it's called Skin and Earth Worlds, and it just shows a map of the entire world, and there's these little symbols kind of sprinkled all over the map, and they're tagged with other Instagram accounts that she's created. And some of them are locked, so you can't get into them. And some of them are, you know, there's a, you know, an industry, like a big, you know, corporate giant in the world. And, you know, anytime their logo comes in anything, she has them tagged in it. And she has little secrets and like little, you know, Easter eggs hidden throughout all the Instagrams. And it's almost it's a hunt. You have to go on a little bit of a journey through Instagram and all these different areas to find stuff about the story. So it's like you're involved in it in some way, and it's really interesting. I haven't read it yet. I don't know when the first issue is coming out. I think it's meant to come out probably in the middle of this month. It's meant to be out soon. Most local comic book shops should have it, but it looks and sounds amazing, and she's wrote it herself, and she's done all the art herself, and it looks really great. It's got a really unique style, a really unique idea. Have you ever heard of the movie called Repo, the Genetic Opera?
No, I've heard about it, but I don't know if I would recognize anything from it.
Okay, it's weird. It's a weird, weird movie. It's one
it
of those
sounds
like weird. Yeah, it's one of those weird like cult classic things.
Like
not
heavy metal?
Quite. No, it is like a bit of a rock opera, but it's not quite a la Rocky Horror Picture Show, but it's similar. It's got a similar kind of feel vibe to it, but a little bit more gory.
Okay.
But it kind of has elements of that. There's like a drug in this world called Zydrate, and it's like, it's, you know, surgery is like a big, you know, like plastic surgery is a big hot commodity. It's like almost like a fashion trend. Like every week someone's getting a new plastic surgery to change their face or something. So in order to cope with the pain, there's a thing called Zydrate. It's a drug, but it's really, really addictive. And there's this thing in Skin and Earth called like pink pills that is similar. It's like, you know, boost your moods. It's almost like happy pills, essentially. Mm. But everyone is like addicted to these happy pills. And it's like, you know, constant, you know, come get your pink pills. And then they have like different districts. There's like, you know, the pink district, which is where everyone, all the rich people live, and they get these, you know, these pink pills. And then there's, you know, the red district, where it's a bit more derelict. It's near, you know, more like the radioactive area.
Mm.
And the main character, N, is E-N, not just the letter N. And lives in like the, it's called the red district, like the derelict district. And it, it sounds really amazing. Like, I love, I'm not just saying that cause I'm biased and I like lights, but like, I do have some standards, but
yeah. it sounds
really interesting. And I appreciate when people kind of pull and put that much work into something, like, you know, multiple, you know, Instagram accounts and maybe multiple YouTube accounts for it, mm-hmm. or something. Like, mm-hmm. it's almost like it's a real thing. It's almost like it's becoming a real thing, and they're making it, you know, something accessible to everybody. It's not just a story. It's like, you know, it's tangible. Mm-hmm. You can actually take your phone and look at the Instagram page of one of the characters in the story. Like, I love that stuff. I think it's so creative, and it's so unique.
And it sounds like she's marketing very wisely to her fan base. Like, it sounds like you're really taking advantage of all the things that I wish I had time to take advantage of with like social media right. and stuff like that.
I don't know where she finds the time. Like, she's a 2-year-old and she's writing an album.
Yeah.
The cool thing about this is that it's also going along with her album. So the idea is, by the time you've read all the comic books and her album comes out, you're going to know some of the lyrics of the songs because they're in, it's like in the dialogue of the comic book.
Yeah.
So it's all kind of, she does this all the time. Everything is planned to a T, and she always has like, you know, countdowns to things. Like the way she marketed the start of this, she's like, I have something cool coming. Mm-hmm. And that's all she said, just something cool is afoot.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just had like this countdown, and she revealed that she changed her hair. Like, her hair is like this kind of flaming orangey red color now, where it was like dark, dark brown. Yeah. And it's so cool.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah, well, when you've got, and I'm not saying that it doesn't take a huge amount of effort, but if that is the one thing that you can do, like if that's your job, which is creating this world, this multimedia experience between an album and a comic and Instagram and memes and all that kind of stuff, if you've got the time to craft it all, because it's the only thing that you're working on creatively, then I mean, it's phenomenal what people can do these days between with technology, what you can do with art, what you can do with like installations. And like, I see some of the coolest stuff on Kickstarter now for like art installs or community sculptures or things that would just not be possible for artists that would not have the reach that they would have without social media, Kickstarter. You know, they'd have to have an agent, or they'd have like, I mean, the money and the means to be a free creative entity is way more accessible now than it used to be.
Yeah.
And it's a select few that are not just, not just talented and not just really good at what they do, but also market savvy.
Yeah.
You know, like, just out of curiosity, because you seem to be a pretty deep fan, do you know if she has any marketing background? Like, did she take any classes, or is that what she happened to go to school? Because a lot of times you'll see like musicians and actors and stuff are out there, and they'll be like, oh yeah, well, I also went to business school, or I actually am an English lit major, or, you know, like stuff like that you don't necessarily see front facing in the paparazzi.
Yeah. I don't know if she actually has any sort of marketing background that I know of. I know she has quite an interesting life experience, I think, but like, she's lived in a bunch of different places. She lived in the Philippines for a couple of years, and, you know, she's just kind of lived in a bunch of places. But I do know that I think she was sort of first to learn marketing, because after her first album, The Listening, when I think she was like maybe 24 years old when it came out, she's almost 30 now. She had a very like, almost like, you know, retro space pop princess sort of vibe. You know, she had like, you know, she took a lot of inspiration from Wonder Woman and Lara Croft and, you know, a lot of, you know, she's, you know, like a lot of badass ladies, but, she's, you know, she had a very like, you know, retro sci-fi feel about her. And her music had a very like, you know, auto-tuned, like, you know, sort of noise to it. It was, you know, spacey. But when her second album came out, it was a lot darker and a lot grittier. You know, this is when the dubstep trend was just coming out, so she tried to incorporate a bit of dubstep into her work.
Mm-hmm.
And the studio was like, no, we want you to go back to like the pop princess days. And she was like, nope. So she funded her own album.
Right.
She just did it. She was like, I'm going to fund my own album. She did everything herself. And I think through that, she sort of was forced to learn a little bit of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her manager was Gianga Meshi, who's a big, you know, lawsuit with him, mm-hmm. you know, sexual assault and what have you. So she kind of dropped him as a manager. I don't know if she has a new manager now or not. But, yeah, I think she focuses on what she likes. And she loves intrigue, and she loves action, and she loves, you know, secrets, you know, like that are exciting, mm-hmm. like, you know, anticipation and,
yeah.
you know,
yeah, building
stuff
up
like that.
Suspense. And
yeah.
Stuff.
Suspense. So that's where I'm looking. Thank you.
Yeah.
She loves all that stuff. So, you know, I think she tries to, she basically does what she wants. She's like, if I'd be into this, I'm going to do it.
Mm.
And if you like it, cool. If not, that's awesome too. So she's really chill. But I think because she's so genuinely herself, and she's so genuine about what she likes and who she is and what she wants to create and her style, it comes off, it's very genuine. And as you know, I love genuine people. I love people who just want to be themselves. I don't like cookie cutter tailored sort of idea. I mean, you know, it's fine, but mm-hmm. it's not interesting because, you know, there's a bunch of people already the same way.
Yeah.
So, you know, having someone who's unique and quirky, who just kind of owns themselves. I love that. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, folks can check out, it's just Lights on Instagram, right? Like that's probably the
Lights. Yep. Yep. Just Lights. Like, cool. like the light bulb, but yep. without the bulb.
Easy to find. Great Instagram handle.
Easy
wow.
to find. Right. That's yeah. her name. That's her legal name.
Is it really?
She changed it. Like it okay. became her nickname, I think in high school. Her, you know, full name is Lights Valerie Ann. And then her last names, which are, I think, Poxleitner Boken, because she got married.
Right.
German last name. But, yeah, she changed her name. Her original first name was Valerie, and then she changed it to Lights and then just pushed everything down.
Cool.
So that is her legal name now. She put a lot of time into changing it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of The Citadel Cafe. We are live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. We were a little bit late tonight to accommodate the third screening of Wonder Woman.
Sorry. Thank you.
No, it's all good. Research, right? You know,
it's true.
It has
yeah.
to be done. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, and I would love to know what you thought of Wonder Woman. So once you've seen it, please write in and let us know. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. And hey, while you're out there, look us up on iTunes and leave us a review. It's one of the best ways for the podcast to get new listeners. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I'm up to online at joelduggan.com. If you like art and comics, particularly maybe women that draw art and comics, then check out forgepublishing.com. Piper Thibodeau's Daily Paintings book is printing right now. It's at the printer. So we're looking at going to be distributing that in the near future. And we're also ramping up for a book by Rob Momart. So that's kind of what I'm up to. And if you want to get some more Wonder Woman talk, and actually more of it just like a DC movie in general talk, check out Comics Coast to Coast this week. Brian, Matt, and myself are going to be digging into a producer episode where we look at the world that the DC franchise is trying to build in cinema right now. A few weeks ago when we didn't have a guest, we did the whole Marvel comic universe and what that's looking like. So we thought it would be just to do a DC version. You can find me online on Twitter and Instagram with just my name, Joel Duggan. Megan, where can people find you online?
Instagram is kind of my main squeeze at Nerdasmic, NERDASMIC. I have a very messy Tumblr as well. It's a variety of just shenanigans, so social justice, queer rights, all sorts of stuff. So that's same handle. A very new YouTube channel. I think I have one video on there, but I hope to put some more media out with costume development and stuff like that, con prep, what have you.
Nice.
And Twitter, which Joel laughed at me about today, because last time I tweeted was January 8th. And I said I'm bad at Twitter, which is not a lie. But I'm going to try and get back into that a little bit more as well. And of course, handle is at Nerdasmic.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. This was really exciting.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
For stretching the time.
No,
and
you're
everything
you're welcome
for me.
Back anytime. Anytime.
Oh, thank you.
This is the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick W.
This This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.